Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. Is that one of the all-time coolest songs there ever were, ever was? The graveyard motif. Well, wait a minute. First, I have to tell you that's Bach's organ Toccata, some famous spooky organ music to kick off our discussion of cemeteries. The graveyard motif is a trusted element in any Halloween decoration. The grave marker is right up there with flying bats and giant spiders and glowing jack-o'-lanterns and wicked witches and the fright department. But the history of cemeteries is a rich one in American life, and for many, cemeteries are places of beauty and peace. Coming up later, we'll learn more about the Greenlawn Abbey preservation effort, and we'll also meet a woman who earns a living caring for others' families' gravesites. Right now, we welcome to the show local historian Ed Lentz. He writes a history column for This Week Community Newspapers and is author of Columbus, The Story of a City, among other books. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Always a pleasure, Ann.
Cemeteries. They're a place that we bury people, but they are also a rich source of data for historians.
Well, they're all kinds of places, actually, because they not only are a place that is a record of who we are and who we've been, they're also, especially in our own time, nature sanctuaries. They're public parks, and they have become something of a place for the living as much as a place of for the dead. And that's been a big change over the course of American history, because if you think back in the early history of our country, most people were buried, if they weren't buried on the back lot of their own house, which happened a lot in rural America, they were buried in a graveyard, the graveyard immediately behind a church, which came over from the European tradition. And we can go to a lot of small towns here in central Ohio, go up to Worthington, for example, right smack in the middle of town, there's a church with a graveyard right behind it. And the graveyards have the stones very closely packed together, and most of those stones have very simple kinds of engravings. They're reminding you of the name of the person, birth and death date, and usually some kind of symbol, like a finger pointing up to heaven, to remind you that life is short and eternity is eternal. You know, one of those kind of things. All that began to change in the 1840s because we had a whole new movement come into American life. It's the Romantic movement. William Cullen Bryant, Edgar Allan Poe, all this kind of thing. And we developed new kinds of cemeteries. Columbus itself didn't really have churchyard cemeteries in the downtown, but it had the Old North Graveyard, which was a 10-acre area just north of the city limits, which was Nationwide Boulevard. It's where the North Market is today. And that graveyard was filling up and posing some problems because the railroads were starting to come into town as well. So it was clear by about the early 1840s that we in this town needed a new cemetery. Same thing was happening in Cleveland and Cincinnati and Dayton, and this new movement to try to take the cemetery out of the middle of town, put it way out in the country, right, where it's away from things, and create this sort of rural park environment really takes over, this rural idea in cemetery planning. A man named Andrew Jackson Downing is probably one of America's first landscape architects, is really a mover and shaker in this movement to try to move toward this kind of cemetery. And these take America really by storm. I mean, every town of any size in America has one of these rural park-like cemeteries with the weaving, winding roads, the very well-landscaped surroundings and so on, and a sort of spread-out sort of look to the whole thing. Sometimes they'll have monuments, bridges, and so on that are put into these cemeteries as well. And they become the dominant form. And it's only really in the 20th century that you begin to see some transition to yet a third kind, the so-called lawn-type cemetery. And I'm sure we've all been to at least one of those along the way. They have very few monuments at all. You're looking at a vast expanse of landscaped area that has relatively few, if any, monuments. And that's been more popular, especially in the era, I'd say, after the 30s, after World War II, into our own time. So just here in central Ohio, you can go to Worthington and see an old-fashioned graveyard. You could go to a place like Greenlawn or Union Cemetery and see the large park-like cemetery. And you can go to any number of these lawn-type cemeteries, usually located farther out in the more exurban areas, more removed suburban areas. This same kind of movement that I'm talking about here in America actually originated over in Europe and France and Britain and so on.
The park-like?
The park-like thing first came out of Paris and London in the period just before the outbreak of the Romantic period. But it rapidly took over in this part of the world. But you can find those kind of cemeteries now around the world.
My guest is Ed Lentz, local historian. We're talking about cemeteries and the history of cemeteries. If you'd like to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Ed, you talked about the Old North Cemetery. What happened to that cemetery? Because it's not there anymore.
Well, the city made a decision that the land had been donated with the idea that if it was ever used for anything other than a cemetery, but the way they phrased it was any other public cemetery purpose, that it would revert to its original owner. So there were actually a couple of lawsuits when that cemetery was finally closed down by the city. And the courts basically ruled that another kind of public use was just as important as the cemetery itself. So the city's placement of its North Market, keep in mind at one time we had several public markets in Columbus. We had the old Central Market where the bus station is today. We had a West Market and an East Market and so on. And the North Market was located there after the cemetery was closed. Now, people had an opportunity. Greenlawn had opened in 1848. Its first person buried there was in 1849. So it had been around a while. And people were given an opportunity to remove their relatives and take them down to Greenlawn, which is the same thing that had happened with the old Franklinton Cemetery as well. A number of people in that cemetery, like Lucas Sullivan, the guy who laid out the town, was buried up there in Franklinton originally, but then later moved down to Greenlawn. And so a lot of people were, but a lot of people weren't as well. And so the first, second mayor of Columbus, John Kerr, the man who was one of the four proprietors who had founded the city, is still there.
Under the North Market?
Well, somewhere. If not under the market, under the parking
lot
next to it.
So back in those, they didn't routinely remove the...
No.
What was interned there? Okay.
No, and that's why a few years ago when they were doing landscaping and parking lot improvements around the North Market, they found about the remains of about 13 people who were later...
I blocked that out.
You blocked that out. You lost that one. And they were later reinterred down at Greenlawn Cemetery in a very nice service, I might add, that I attended, because local historians do that kind of thing.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Ed Lentz. He's a local historian, and we're talking about cemeteries. That famous graveyard motif is popular around this time of year, but there's a lot more to it. What are some of the more interesting cemeteries in Columbus, do you think?
Well, I think, too, if we talk about North Market, which really, for all practical purposes, still is a cemetery, it's still sort of an interesting place to visit in that regard, still has some nice ghost stories associated with it, which local ghost tours take into account when they're talking about the Old North Cemetery. There was the Old East Cemetery that had been used for a time. It's now immediately south of Children's Hospital. It's a park now, but it originally had been a cemetery as well, and it was closed about the same time that the Old North Graveyard was closed down. I mean, today when we talk about really significant cemeteries here, big ones in central Ohio, we're always drawn to Greenlawn because it is so large, it's been around so long, and it is probably the quintessential rural park cemetery. Actually, Union Cemetery is older up on the north side of town. It goes back to 1806, and it's also a significant place with, again, a number of important people. And you can learn a lot about people by taking a look at their grave sites and tombstones and this kind of thing. But above and beyond that, when you go to a place like one of these park-like cemeteries, you can learn a lot about landscape architecture. You can learn a lot about American architecture. And they're also nature sanctuaries. The Audubon Society does a number of tours every year in these larger cemeteries for people who want to go out and look at the birds. And the botanists do cemeteries because some of the biggest surviving trees in central Ohio are in these cemeteries. So they're great places for a variety of reasons to take a look at.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And George, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Fascinating subject. My mother, when we were young, always used to walk through cemeteries. I can remember one down at Lake Hope, like after reading tombstones. But my question to you is, if you're on the west side and you're heading towards downtown on 7th, on the right-hand side, if you look down, there was a circle of grave markers with one in the middle. Now, it would have had to have been on state property, I think, but it was so unique, and I think somebody went in and traced it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You're talking about the institutional cemeteries out on the hilltop, beginning in the 1870s, both the old Columbus Lunatic Asylum had burned, and the new, what will become the Columbus State Hospital, is put up on the hilltop. And for a long time, it was one of the largest buildings in the world under one roof, until it got torn down not too many years ago. On the other side of Broad Street, of course, was the Columbus Developmental Center, and it's still over there as well. There were cemeteries established for people who were basically the residents of those institutions, as well, there is a cemetery out there, a small cemetery, for persons who had died at the Ohio Penitentiary and were buried out there as well. Originally, persons who died at the Ohio Penitentiary were buried in a lot immediately north of the penitentiary, but then the penitentiary expanded down at the corner of Denison and Neal Avenue and Spring Street. And as that penitentiary expanded, they couldn't any longer use the little lot on the north side of the pen as a cemetery, so they developed a new cemetery out there on the far west side. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing it one or more of those little cemeteries right there along Route 70.
This is a circle, a complete circle of grave markers. I can't. It was just so strange, and I just always wondered what the heck it was.
That's what it is.
Thank you, George.
Yep. Bye.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll get back to some questions, emails as well. When we return from this break, my guest is Ed Lentz, local historian, and we're talking about cemeteries. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Columbus College of Art and Design. CCAD offers continuing education classes where you can update your creative career skills. Classes start in January. Information and online registration at www.ccad.edu.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Join WOSU Public Media and the Refectory for our first ever Chefs in the City wine tasting, Friday, November 19th. Guests will sample hand-selected wines and taste exclusive creations. You'll also be a part of a special WOSU TV production and learn how to pair food and wine like an expert. A limited number of tickets go on sale this Saturday morning at 11. For more information, visit wosu.org/chefs. And it's 46 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20. A little bit of sunshine today, a few clouds, and a high of 53. Clear skies tonight and a low of 33 degrees. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I love my theme music, but I love coming back with different stuff, too. That, of course, was Thriller by Michael Jackson. And, again, welcome back to the show. My guest is Ed Lentz. He's a local historian. We're talking about cemeteries. And I also want to welcome to the show Renee Korna. She is a landscape gardener who specializes in burial plots. Renee, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
We have some more questions for Ed. We'll get to those, and then we'll chat with Renee about what she does. 614-292-8513. Dale, you're on the air with Ed Lentz.
Hi. My father and relatives before them are buried at a small cemetery north of 270 off High Street called Flint Cemetery. It's on Flint Road. And I can go up there and look at headstones that go back to the Civil War. And I can also find my entire DeVault and Finney family there in that cemetery. And some of them, you can barely read what it says on it. It's so old. But it actually goes back to the Civil War. The irony is that when I got married, my wife had a visionary thought of procuring lots at Forest Lawn on the east side. And I lost her in 06. And the one thing that she loved besides dolphins was wind chimes. And to walk through there and see all the wind chimes, it just, you know, I feel really close to her when I hear those wind chimes. But the Flint Cemetery is small, but very old.
It's a classic example of a country cemetery. There was a small little community called Flint up in that part of the world that was actually a little local village. And you can still see some remnants of it.
This is up Flint Road right off 23,
north of 270. You come just north of 270.
South of Lazelle.
South of Lazelle, and you'll see the road arcing off to the right just past 270. On the left is the big white Thompson house. And if you go up that little road, you'll see the remnants of what used to be a little village in there. There was a school building that's still there and a couple other things along that way. And the Flint Cemetery was the community cemetery for that small little village.
So. Dale, thanks for your call.
Surely.
Dale brought up the issue of wind chimes in the cemetery, in this particular one. And Renee Korna is a landscape gardener who specializes in burial plots. Tell us about some of the things that you do for folks who hire you to take care of their family's graves.
And it's such a pleasure to be on your show and here sitting with Ed and listening to all this history. It's really wonderful. And this last caller that came in, thank you. This last caller that came in is the reason why, same reason I enjoy it, listening to the wind chimes. It brings back all the memories and the thoughts to being there in the cemetery.
So what are some of the things you do?
I go to each gravesite and assess what it could use to liven it up, so to speak. Folks hire me. Actually, I'm by mouth only right now and email. There's something about the stone's beauty that's very lonely to me, and so if I can liven it up with some bright colors in the winter or in the summer, it just does something. It adds something to it that makes the memory, the symbol for their still living spirit come alive.
It's interesting how personalized some graves are become. Graves are. I don't go to cemeteries very often. Unfortunately, I go for when there's a burial. And but I've been amazed at, particularly when people die young, the tributes to that person.
Mm-hmm.
Is that pretty common to you?
There are all kinds.
Right.
There are all kinds. My husband has been gone 25 years now, and it's been such an effort to get to the cemetery and do things that I always wanted to do. Now that I have time, it feels like a gift to each person that I help. I hope that it makes them feel like I feel the gratification of knowing that care is there.
Do a lot of people want this? In your experience, is this
Several.
It's a pretty regular.
Several. And then there's the subject, too, of other people that, you're never alone in the cemetery. Ooh.
Well, people get creeped out by what you do, right?
Sometimes, yes. But I do get some odd looks. But there are other visitors as well in the cemetery when I am there. And you do see people. I mean, it's not a nice thing to say, but you do see other people looking at other people's gravesites and noticing whether or not they've been attended to. You do notice these things. So if that helps as well, then why not be there?
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit, when I'm at the gravesite, I'm talking to the person that's buried there. And so there's another creep out. Sorry.
If you're already creeped out, you can push right to the edge. What are some of your favorite cemeteries in the area?
I'm at St. Joseph's and Union Cemetery right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those, what do you like about them?
What do I like about
them?
Yeah,
I said, what are some of your favorite? Yeah.
Oh, well, at St. Joseph's, south of Columbus, it's a little hike to get down 23, but there's owned by the Catholic Diocese.
Uh-huh.
Is a quarry that runs along the backside. It's beautiful. And you don't see anybody down there because they're not allowed. But it's absolutely beautiful. Like Ed was talking about, the winding roads that go through and all the landscaping as well. It's there. Union Cemetery is where I go through and take my dog for a bike ride sometimes.
That's one just
well.
Up on Tangi River
it's
Road.
It's a way of keeping maintenance right between between campus and Riverside Hospital on both sides of the road.
We should point out, too, that funerary practices change as technology changes.
Right.
A lot of the older stones in the older cemeteries were made out of either limestone or sandstone, A, because there's a lot of it around, and B, because it's easy to carve. The problem with that is that weather affects, especially acid rain, affects both kinds of stones, and they tend to weather badly. And it's only really when you get down in the latter part of the 19th century that you develop the power tools that can handle granite stones and then begin to start putting some rather elaborate decoration where you start seeing almost the image of a photograph done in granite. And then some of the newer technologies, which frankly we haven't seen much of yet in central Ohio. They're popular in places like California, where people put a DVD player in the middle of their tombstone so that you can literally watch a movie of somebody and this
I've
kind of thing.
I've seen photographs in looks like lucite or something embedded into gravestones and stuff like
and
that.
And if you think a cemetery's spooky now, wait till you walk through it at night and it has a motion sensor and this person starts talking to you from his grave.
614-292-8513. Robin, you're on the air. You want to talk about Union Cemetery?
Actually, it's a different cemetery. I'm not sure what it's called, but it is on Olentangy River Road, north of Union. It's actually north of Henderson Road, and it's just a tiny little, I mean, you wouldn't even notice it, and I've driven by it many times and always kind of wondered about it. Ed, do you know what I'm talking about?
I know the one you're talking about, and again, it's another older family cemetery that's located up there. You can find them spotted around all through the county. They're not hard to find. But that's what you're talking about.
So that was a private cemetery.
It's a private family cemetery up around Bethel Road, I think is the one she's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One that's pretty, you can see it pretty easily from the road.
Now I'm going to drive home that way today, okay. Beth, or Robin, I mean. Now I have to see it. I love driving by. I don't know. There's some. It's nice. It is. It's like a park. It's like you're driving by green space, and that's so nice in the city. And Greenlawn was once a country cemetery, but now it's becoming more and more surrounded by industry and buildings and that sort of a thing. So it's an amazing getaway. Robin, thanks for your call.
Mm-hmm.
614-292-8513. And Brad, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, yeah, enjoying the show very much.
Thanks.
And I'd like to mention it's off the Central Ohio map. And in Cincinnati, there's a cemetery, Spring Grove, which is one of five on the, I believe I was told, on the National Register, and it's just a wonderful, it's really an arboretum, and it's been there a long time, and it's fabulous, and my grandfather, maternal grandfather is buried there, and it's something to see. It's just north of downtown Cincinnati, thought I'd mention that, and see if Ed's had a chance to see it.
Oh, yes, it's one of America's great cemeteries. If you had to make a list of probably the 50 best in America, Spring Grove would undoubtedly be on it. It is one of the older ones, and probably it's been one of the leaders over the years in cemetery trends. And again, like Greenlawn in Columbus or Woodland in Dayton or Lakefront in Cleveland, it was another one that was built way out in the country.
At the time,
away from the town in rural. And that posed some problems for some people who were used to the classic little graveyard behind the church. And now people were being asked to get in their carriage and go way out in the country to visit the grave sites of their relatives.
It was good for the hearse business.
And what I think surprised a lot of people was just how fast it caught on. Because it was a change in the way we looked at cemeteries in America. And it says something about how much America was changing between 1840 and about 1860, that these new kinds of cemeteries just catch on incredibly fast and become just the accepted practice, the common thing to do in America.
Brad, thanks for your call.
Of course. Thank you.
Bye. My guest is Ed Lentz and also Renee Korna. Ed is a local historian, and Renee is a landscape gardener who specializes in grave sites. Her name of her business is called Burial Blessings. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, as did Charlotte, but maybe that's not right. Okay. Let's take a call then. Jane, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a question about a cemetery in Dublin. It's very small, and it's on right off Memorial Drive by the golf club. And I think, if I remember correctly, it was a boiler explosion, and there are a whole lot of people who were involved with this, plus some other people, but it looked, it's very old. It's like 19th century or something. Do you know about that?
I don't know about the boiler explosion. Can't help you with that one. But it sounds like, again, another one of the small community cemeteries. It's located some distance from Dublin itself?
No, it's right by the golf club, by where they have the memorial tournament there.
Okay.
It's in Dublin there. But it's on one of the little side streets in Muirfield Village, that the name of which escapes me.
My guess is, not knowing much about it, but my guess is if it's that far removed from the center of downtown Dublin, that it probably started out then as a localized cemetery for family or other set of families. Some of those were multi-family cemeteries located some distance from the actual village itself.
Right, but it had many people from this tragedy, whatever it was, that happened long ago. It was interesting. Got to go out there.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Thank you very much, Jane. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. Let's talk a little bit about how things changed in our traditions, because I kind of joked about it must have been good for the hearse business, but things did change. I mean, we started to put a lot more money into burials. The average person, I should say, even was doing that.
Well, funerary practices evolve and change over time. The tradition in our country for a long time was the interment of the entire body. The cremation was not a widely practiced matter in much of America. It is becoming more popular in the 20th and 21st century than it had been before. But again, funerals, if it's not that long ago, and many people could, older folks may still remember when funerals were held in the home, basically, and that persons were invited to the home for the funeral, and the funeral party went from the home to the cemetery. And the emergence of the modern funeral home is really a phenomenon of about the last 100 to 150 years. And that is a changing pattern and practice in American life as well. And what that funeral may consist in, whether it might be simply a very simple religious service, a memorial service combined with a burial service. These are things that have changed and evolved over the course, really, of the last, I'd say, 50 to 100 years or so.
How much do you think that had to do with the fact that they moved the cemeteries out?
Well, part of it had to do with the care that's provided. Renee was talking about the traditional assumption, and I can remember this, and I'm not that old, when basically people spent a lot of time, family time, going to cemeteries, taking care of the grass, making sure that the stone was properly taken care of, and you would do this on a regular basis. And as little as a few decades ago, virtually every family in America went to the cemetery a couple times a year, winter and summer, just to check up and make sure everything was okay.
Pull the weeds and plant flowers.
In an increasingly mobile society, with people living dozens of miles, hundreds of miles away from these diverse cemeteries, it becomes increasingly difficult to do that. Responding to that, the cemeteries adopted the practice of selling grave sites with something called perpetual care, which was a relatively new idea. It wasn't part of the original idea with many of these rural cemeteries, but there was a demand for it for that very reason, because of the mobility of American life. And so the cemeteries started caring for some of these sites, as well as private businesses like Renee's, because the need was there, and it's still there. Even today, in these cemeteries as well.
But the tradition of worrying about it so much is fading.
I think the tradition of worrying about it, being interested in it, is still there. It's just how do you respond to it?
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Let's see. Mike, you know about the story that the last caller, about the Dublin cemetery?
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. Three brothers, back in, during the Civil War, two went off to the Army and one stayed home. And there was a sawmill powered by a steam engine that was brought into the farm, cut wood, blah, blah, blah. Well, the thing blew up. The bodies were unrecognizable. They just put parts and holes in the ground. And I believe it's the cemetery that's actually on the Muirfield Golf Course. It was the Doolin family farm, which is part of the Muirfield Golf Course today. Now, I got this from a family member who does extensive research into his family, and he came across this story. I happened to see that the gravesite I think it's three or four graves surrounded by a metal fence, a small metal fence, okay, right on the golf course. So that's the story.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mike, for calling.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Incredible.
614-292-8513. Here's a topic. Susan, you're on the air. You want to talk about pet cemeteries?
I do. We were out by the airport several months ago, and my husband took me to this, went down this little road, and there was a pet cemetery that I had never heard of. And some of the graves go back to the 1920s, I believe. I wondered if you had any information on that.
Ed?
Pretty much a phenomenon more of the 20th century than the 19th, but the idea of having separate interment sites as pet cemeteries make a lot of sense. This, again, is as America is beginning to become less rural, more urban, more mobile, the idea of having your own family pet cemetery on the back 40 of your farm makes a certain amount of sense when you've got a back 40 and you've got a farm. But once you don't, and we become an increasingly urban society, and this takes a while, because keep in mind, it's till well into the 20th century, most of America is still rural. It's not until we get past the 1920s and 30s that we really start seeing an urban society emerging, and meeting the needs of that urban society, one way, is with pet cemeteries. And so any city of any size has one, at least one, sometimes many more.
Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
614-292-8513. I think I was giving out a friend's number. Angie, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Renee?
Yeah, I was wondering, what is the standard service that you offer, and can you customize if you have, like, a favorite flower or something?
I'd absolutely love to. Yeah, sure. My email is burialblessings@gmail.com.
Why don't you just kind of maybe answer the question conceptually? Okay. Like, what are the sorts of things people ask for?
Okay. Whatever it is you ask for, I can customize to your needs. I would like most likely to see the site, or I need to know the weather that it receives. I need to know the sunshine that it receives. One thing I see most often happening is sedum or bushes or other things that might take over the stone. And if it's not planted accordingly, then it tends to overgrow and makes a big mess, and you really can't do it justice.
And you're doing planted things. You're not bringing in flower arrangements, right?
No, I am not bringing in flower arrangements. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm planting in the ground as per rules of that cemetery that you would be at.
That's right. See. Cemeteries have rules.
I personally like color, so I like the brilliancy of color. I do one that's seen far from the road, and I'm very proud of that. So it's like, you know, that person's there, and I know I'm one of the people that knows that person is there. Yeah.
Angie, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Thanks.
614-292-8513. When we return, we will welcome Kate Matheny. She is president of the Greenlawn Abbey Preservation Association. It's a nonprofit organization formed to renovate and reopen the Abbey at the Greenlawn Cemetery. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Stephen Sondheim has a new book collecting his lyrics and telling the stories behind them. On the next Fresh Air, Sondheim tells us some of those stories and offers some surprising criticisms of other lyricists, including his mentor, Oscar Hammerstein. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thank you to everyone who pledged their support during our recent fall membership drive. The drive was a great success thanks to your generous contributions. Your membership keeps classical music, NPR News, local news, and programs like All Sides with Ann Fisher on the radio for all of Central Ohio. If you missed the chance to give, you can still do so at WOSU.org. Thank you for making an investment in the future of WOSU Public Media.
Support for WOSU comes from the business law firm of Thompson Hind, with approximately 400 lawyers and 7 offices. From the boardroom to the courtroom, Thompson Hind offers a variety of corporate legal services. More at thompsonhind.com.
Some sunshine today and a few clouds, a high of 53 degrees this afternoon. Clear skies tonight. We could see frost after midnight, a low of 33 degrees. Sunshine tomorrow and a high of 55, currently 46 degrees in downtown Columbus. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As I promised, joining us now is Kate Matheny. She's president of the Greenlawn Abbey Preservation Association, a nonprofit organization formed to renovate and reopen the Abbey by offering programs and raising money. She's also former executive director of the Columbus Landmarks Foundation, a title she shares with Ed Lenz, by the way. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you, and thank you for having me here. This is a delight.
Greenlawn Abbey is a mausoleum.
It's a huge mausoleum.
Tell us about it.
It's located on Columbus's near south side. It's on Greenlawn Avenue, quite close to the freeway that would be 71 South. And it is totally separate from the cemetery. It shares the name of Greenlawn Cemetery, but they are totally, totally separate.
Okay.
It was built in the 1920s. It was finished 1927. It represents a movement from individual family mausoleums to one that's more public, that people by the 1920s, they were beginning to get flush with income and disposable income, and so they saw these family mausoleums, like in the case of Greenlawn Cemetery. There's some fabulous mausoleums at Greenlawn Cemetery, one for Hayden, the Hayden family, and another one by Packard, who was an early influential architect, and that's an Egyptian revival mausoleum that is a stunner. So people were looking at that kind of way to take care for their deceased family members, and they liked it. So there was a local company that moved into that market. It was called Columbus Mausoleum Company, and they built the Abbey as their signature building. It's 550 crypts, all of which have been sold for quite some time, but there are a number that are not occupied, and our organization is working with family members to deed those back to us, because our plan and what we are proceeding to do is to reopen the Abbey as a functioning mausoleum, accepting cremated remains by largely, but not slowly, that solely, that we will be able to accommodate some grave, or the
caskets.
Caskets. Yeah. That's a word I'm trying to come up with. And so we'll be able to make that as a very, very viable business, which is very exciting. I just love that. Being as old as dirt as I am, and been around Columbus a million years, what you are faced with so frequently is a glorious or even a really good building that's got good bones. You want to save it. It's sound. What do you do with it? And in this case, the original function is just as relevant today as it was when it was built, because baby boomers and many of us are reaching that age, and increasingly people don't want to be buried. They want to be cremated. And so we're approaching renovating and reopening this building as an environmental sensitive approach to meeting people's
The whole green funeral movement is getting very big.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have a two-acre site. We're going to be developing that site into memorial gardens and scatter gardens. By the way, going back to one of the earlier callers about Spring Grove Cemetery in Cincinnati, we are working currently with Franklin Park Conservatory to develop a site plan, because they're so good at what they do, and we're going to be hiring the landscape architecture firm that has been the landscape architecture firm for Spring Grove since it began. And so there's a lot of talent here and in Ohio, and we're going to be using that to bring life back to this, to resurrect the Greenlawn Abbey.
It had fallen into disrepair.
Yes, it's been the target of vandalism for quite a long time. We have a lot of glorious stained glass windows that have been demolished or seriously damaged over the years. Many of them were produced locally by a local firm, and that are signed as well, Rohrbach was the company, and we have a picture of their warehouse, which was downtown on the river.
Rod, you're on the air. You have a question about the Hayden family, and so did I. Is it the Hayden mining family?
I don't know if it is or not. Basically, and this is near the Abbey, I just wanted to, say that it seemed like a lot of the monuments around the cemetery, seemed to, the more wealth and power the family had, the bigger the monument or whatever. And one that I was interested in particular, I'd be interested in some of the other monuments too, but I'm interested in the C.H. Hayden Mausoleum, which is near the Abbey.
Right.
Ed?
Well, Peter Hayden, his father, is Charles Hayden. Peter Hayden had come to Columbus from the East, like a lot of people did in the 1830s, to make his fortune. And he did. He made his fortune basically the old-fashioned way. He used prison labor, which was extraordinarily cheap to make saddles and a variety of other things. And then he went into the iron business. And then he turned over most of his business interests to his two sons. And he went to New York, where he helped form a brokerage house, which in one form or another is still around. But his sons later branched out into the coal business
The
timber business in southeastern Ohio.
So that's Haydenville.
That's Haydenville.
Okay.
That's Haydenville with the opening of the Hocking Valley Railroad and so on. And Peter Hayden, after his death, was brought back to Columbus, and he too is buried in Greenlawn with a much more modest marker. It's actually an obelisk kind of marker in another part of the cemetery. But his son, Charles Hayden, wanted something a little more ostentatious, I suppose, for the family. And so they came up with probably the biggest and most impressive mausoleum in Greenlawn Cemetery, which is right near the chapel in the middle of the cemetery.
You know, when they plan these structures, do they think about how many people are going to eventually occupy them? How do you plan something like that?
Well, if you're planning it just for an immediate family, very often they're going to be relatively small. And they're going to have room inside for 8, 10, 12 people. In the case of the Hayden Mausoleum, I think they were planning for three generations when they built the thing, because it's pretty big. It has lots of room inside of it. But most of them are more modest, if you take a look at them, not just in Greenlawn, but in other cemeteries as well. They tend to be for a family and maybe the next generation, that sort of thing, not much bigger.
Could I add to that? Even in the Abbey, you'll have areas that were bought by a family for multiple generations. Like we have the cells area from the cells circus family. And so I think what happens a lot is you want to do your family right and do it well. And what ends up not happening a lot is having adequate funds to care for it in the long term. And I know that that's a challenge for cemeteries, and in particular Greenlawn Cemetery, because they have these beautiful cemetery and mausoleums. And caring for them long term is a challenge.
614-292-8513. Rod, thanks for your call.
Yes, I had one more question, too, if I might.
Okay.
I was wondering when the Abbey was open to the public, and also there's a mausoleum on Greenlawn Avenue at Harmon. I was wondering if that's ever open to the public.
Well, let's talk about Greenlawn first. It is sold out, but...
Yes,
that
we have a program.
Tales of the Crypt.
We have a program going on this Saturday night. It's called Tales from the Crypt, and we use dedicated, trained volunteers. And this year, we actually have some professional actors who take on the persona of a person or a particular notable historic figure that's interred in the Abbey. So we have Sells from the Sells family. We have Mayor Carb, who was five-time mayor in the city of Columbus. We have Civil War veterans being represented. We have a very famous magician who preceded Houdini called Thurston the Magician, and he was internationally famous. And so we had a program this year called Bring Back the Magic, where we celebrated magic and we celebrated Thurston. So, yes, we do have a program this Saturday. We'll have people there. The event
is sold
out. So if you'd like to come by in the afternoon, I know that we'll be there and we'll try to accommodate people.
Okay, Rod?
That is so great.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Let's see, 614-292-8513. If you'd like to give us a call, we have a few more minutes. And Tess, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, first of all, that's really wonderful news about the mausoleum and it being restored and renewed. I spend several weeks every year out of the year in Paris, about 3 or 4 weeks at least out of the year. And, you know, they still have such a different viewpoint of cemeteries there than we do here, which is that they're still very much public places. They're in the middle of the city. They're treated like a park. And, of course, you know, people all go to Père Lachaise, it being the most famous one. But, you know, there's so many beautiful in Montmartre and city cemeteries throughout the city. And at lunchtime on a nice day, it's just quite common to see Parisians having their lunch and reading a book and in these beautiful surroundings. And I always encourage, and I've gotten many people to visit Green Lawn who have no idea that you could look at a cemetery that way. They've never seen one like that. They've never visited one. And for me, it's just a destination. It's someplace to go walk around. It's beautiful and peaceful. So I'm really glad that you're resurrecting there, so to speak, no pun intended, the mausoleum. And that's really great news, and just keep up the good work. It's a real treasure and a gem. One other thing is that I don't know if this was mentioned earlier, but it was common, I know, in Victorian times, both here, I think, and also in Europe, for people, whenever somebody notable died, like the queen or the president, people would all go to the cemetery and visit their family grave. You know, you put on your mourning clothes and whatever mourning attire, you know, you put on black crepe or whatever, trim your dresser. And it would be a day where everybody kind of went both to pay respect to the person who died and to, you know, also to pay respect to their own family. And lastly, do they hear, like in Green Lawn, in, like, for instance, in France, you will see people who bought the cemetery with maintenance in perpetuity. And it'll say that, you know, on the gravestone, because then they paid a huge amount of money. I think it was it? Victor Hugo said that being buried in Père Lachaise was like having mahogany furniture in your living room. So, you know, they would pay this huge amount of money to be buried in perpetuity. But I never see that here, and I wondered if that was a practice here as well. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks. Okay, Tess, thanks a lot. Ed? Any sense?
Most major cemeteries now offer perpetual care. I don't know that it's quite as carriage trade as what we're talking about with Père Lachaise, which, by the way, was the first of the great garden cemeteries, even though it is in the middle of Paris. And it was essentially the inspiration for what became the first of the great American park cemeteries, which was Mount Auburn in Boston, which from 1826 to 1831. That was the first of the great park cemeteries in this country, and it was, frankly, modeled on Père Lachaise, only putting it out in the country rather than just simply having a garden.
Right, and when you talk about putting them out in the country and the park-like atmosphere that they wanted to create, the irony is that fewer people get out there to enjoy it because it's out of sight, and even Green Lawn is – out of sight. I mean, well, if you don't know where it is,
miss it. But also in the early part of the 20th century, or even the latter part of the 18th century, there were real environmental issues. There were air quality issues. There were any number of problems in terms of the nitty-gritty of living in the city. So you used it as an opportunity to get out into the country, breathe fresh air, be surrounded by green. And so it was a really excellent opportunity for people to have that really nice experience. Talking about world graveyards, I have had the pleasure of being in Prague, and there's the Jewish cemetery that was in the ghetto, and it's quite small, and so it's hundreds of years old, and it's a magical place. Mm-hmm. And they actually have layers of family or burials or whatever because they weren't allowed additional land. And it's an amazing place.
Wow.
I wanted to add, too, that the last caller on her enjoying going to the cemetery, and it's so common over in Europe. My sister-in-law and I, we go out to the cemetery with our lawn chairs, and we have some good debate. We straighten out the world problems. Well, it's incredible.
Picnic,
yeah.
They
it's
do
a
all
nice
kinds
place.
Of things.
Yeah.
You know, and that hits on a very important issue, is in Europe, and probably it's not unique to Europe, is that they don't see it necessarily as a mausoleum or a gravesite forever. mausoleums, you'll have a family member in there for X amount of time, and then they're removed and cremated, and then the space is occupied by somebody else. And so there's a limited, the finite amount of land in Europe, and so they really, it makes a lot of sense in many ways.
We have an email now from Vicky. She says, about 45 years ago, I think I remember two graves out between Port Columbus runways. They were chained off. Who were those people, and are the graves still there, paved over, or were they moved? Do you know anything about that?
I know there were a couple of graves out there, and I always assumed it was another little small family graveyard
probably
that was just saved as part of the expansion of Port Columbus.
Until Progress took over, and, you know, that in the North Market.
Right.
It's inevitable.
I should mention in passing, too, that, you know, mausoleums are still quite popular. One of the things that's happened because of the success of Green Lawn Abbey, a little bit later you get Amaranth Abbey up at Union Cemetery, mm-hmm. which is now part of Union Cemetery. And, then, of course, Green Lawn itself starts building mausoleums within the Green Lawn Cemetery.
The family mausoleums.
Even bigger mausoleums. I mean, okay. The chapel was originally designed essentially for services when weather was bad. But then later, there's a mausoleum section attached right. to the chapel. And then later, Green Lawn Cemetery builds a couple little smaller mausoleums around the different parts of the cemetery.
We're running out of time, but Kate wanted to ask when, I think it was Rob or Rod called up about when else can they see the Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
Is it only open when you have these special events at this point?
Security is a real issue for us. So, actually, we were broken into last year,
mm-hmm.
and the bronze gates on the first floor were stolen and sold for scrap. Mm-hmm. So subsequent to that, we installed a security system. And, yes, people, generally family members, can contact us, and we'll let them into the building. Otherwise, it's locked up. But you can definitely make arrangements to see the building.
Are there other events coming up this year that you have planned?
Well, it'll be 2011.
Okay.
We did three programs this year that were just really well received. We did Great Gatsby. It's a lawn party. We did a lawn party in the 1920s theme, so people dressed in 20s garb. We had Model A cars there. There's a Model A club. We had vintage dancers from Ohio Historical Society. It was really well received. And then we did Bring Back the Magic, which celebrated magic and Thurston. And the Tales is our third one of the year. So
Tales from the Crypt. It sold out this weekend, but I want to thank Kate Matheny for joining us today.
Thank you, Anne. This is a delight.
Kate is board president for the Green Lawn Abbey Preservation Association, also Renee Korna.
Thank you so much.
Landscape gardener and owner and operator of Burial Blessings. And Ed Lentz, local historian, columnist, author, also a former board president.
Director.
I'm sorry, of the director of the
Columbus Landmarks Foundation,
who also does Halloween tours. So call Landmarks at 221-0227 to learn about their...
extraordinaire.
We'll post a link to your operation, but right now we have to go. Thank you all. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating our nationally ranked library, zoo, and science museum. With donors and funds in 33 Ohio counties, the Columbus Foundation, where your philanthropy and your community come together.